Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Much is being written today about what makes for effective management. Times are tougher and tougher for most businesses, and all too often that means times are tougher and tougher for the workers. More and more is expected on, less and less. Few people are swimming against that tide. I've been reading some compelling logic, for instance, from Fairfax economics editor Ross Gittins recently, who says that happier staff work better, and the best businesses are those that look after their workers, train them, mentor them, pay them well, and let them just get on with the job. Wouldn't you want to work there? And there's another interesting voice in this debate who says that effective management is a result of a compassionate culture. Wouldn't you want to work there? Marg Toneman has worked for many years in management, coaching and consulting for CEOs, and she's on about leadership that's fair and just and brilliant, the carrot principle. So where does that come from? Let's see. Marg Toneman joins us now on Open House. Marg, welcome.
Hi, Lee.
Great wisdom. I look forward to this discussion enormously, Marg. As I said, it's a question that's so much in the forefront today. What kind of workplace works best? How do we treat the workers? So often the response of companies and managers is to just keep on ramping up the pressure. They're anything but compassionate and the workers are anything but happy. Is this all just a product of our tougher economic times, do you think?
I think in part, yes. It is a result of tougher economic times. The idea that an organisation needs to be lean and to get the very most out of its employees. Unfortunately, pushing to that level of getting the most doesn't return loyalty and doesn't necessarily return high performance. In fact, what it does do is create very disgruntled, very unhappy employees, and unhappy employees don't produce.
Yes, because it's lean, for sure, but also often mean.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's see where you fit into this. Give us a bit of a background about yourself, where you've been coming from. How have you been shaped in your particular approach to management, Marg?
Well, certainly for me, one of the eye-opening moments, I suppose, is early on in my consulting career and early on in my career as an employee, when I started to see that results were not necessarily about pushing to the point of breaking, but people responded with loyalty and with performance when they were treated with respect, when they were treated with some consideration. So for me then as an employer, I started to also see in my own conduct that when I treated my staff well, I got great results. And when I pushed them, I didn't get great results. So not only was it my own personal experience as an employer, but also prior to that as an employee, where I would see that in my colleagues, and I saw that in the relationships that my then employer had with others.
So you've come up with, as I said, this carrot principle, C-A-R-A-T. We'll go through that in a moment. And one thing I love about it, how it's grounded in research, you're tackling a range of what you call fads in how managers manage. What do you mean by that?
Essentially what I saw when I started in consulting many years ago, what I saw is that we would, as consultants, and what I saw in organisations, is organisations would really jump from one thing to the next. It was the idea of managing almost in a sense like a ball in a pinball machine, that managers, through a sense of insecurity and wanting to do the very best, would jump from one thing that promised some results and then would drop that quickly and move to the next.
You feel a bit sorry for them in a way.
Yeah, I do. Sure.
Yeah. So this is the carrot principle. C-A-R-A-T, as I said. C for compassion.
That's right.
Which is the foundational component. A for affirmation. R for reliability. A for accountability. And T for trust, C-A-R-A-T. Take us through each one of those elements, why they're important and how they work out in practice. First, compassion. And it's not sympathy or, as you say, sycophancy.
That's right. And I think that's where a lot of organisations, even very much today, and the idea of organisations wanting to be an employer of choice, get to that point where they think being compassionate means that they have to accept everything.
Yes.
Within the parameters of what happens in that employee-employer relationship. So So if someone is repeatedly late or wanting to leave early, those types of areas, people feel, well, oh, you know, I've got to be compassionate. I have to accept that. The reality is that you can't accept that. You need to create accountability. People need to be made to be accountable for their performance and for their conduct. So it's being moved to act favourably in a situation for sure, but it's compassion with accountability, and you can't have one without the other.
And compassion is a kind of heart thing.
That's right. It's a heart thing. It's looking at, and again, some of the examples that I use is the example of Jesus Christ, the example of Gandhi and Martin Luther King, which says that they saw an unjust situation and they were moved to respond. So compassion is a behaviour, it's a conduct. It's saying this situation is unfair and I'm going to do something about it.
And a product of how we view our workers. I think that's one of the keys to it, it seems.
Mm. Well, in the workplace, it's manifested by being considerate when someone needs to take time off because their child is sick. It's being considerate when there is illness or there is, you know, certain areas that happen in life that we need to be compassionate towards. But that is also, again, I keep coming back to, you can't have one of those components without the others, because then they're out of balance.
Yes. So next one is affirmation. And I love the quote from Jack Welch. He's the retired chairman and CEO of General Electric, a huge and very successful company. What was his approach, Mark?
Certainly, you know, Jack was, some supporters of Jack will say that he did great things by his people, and he did in many ways. And one of the things that he said is the job of any leader is to make your people feel as though they are 12 feet tall. And he did that very well in some instances. Unfortunately, in some other instances, he didn't do so well, and I mentioned that in the book, where there were some retrenchments and some other things that went on. But certainly the ethos is there, that idea that treat people, you know, raise the benchmark, not lower the benchmark, make people feel as though they can do amazing things. And I know my own examples with my own employees, when I've believed the best of them, that they have, you know, risen to the challenge rather than the other way around. You know, it's like that old saying, you keep calling someone an idiot, then they'll eventually behave that way.
Yes. You take people through a one-minute exercise. Let us know what that is.
It's an exercise that I've done for many years in consulting, and I suppose it's probably the one that returns the greatest result in the shortest amount of time. And what I do is I ask people to pair up, and we spend 60 seconds saying affirming things to each other, whether it's the colour of their tie, the colour of their eyes or their intellect or whatever. It never fails to surprise me how that 60 seconds creates this camaraderie between that partnership, even of people who I know within that organisation aren't getting on well. Because it takes away, I suppose that's the idea of saying I can focus on something good about that person. I don't necessarily need to like everything about that person. I don't necessarily need to feel that this person's going to be the best mate in this place, in this workplace. But I can focus on some good aspects, and it creates that sense of motivation. And for me, having spent years of training people in the area of motivation, what I saw over time was that some of the simplest things create the greatest result. And that idea of being genuine and genuinely applauding someone's efforts and genuinely identifying some good things about other people were far more motivating than, you know, giving them a pay increase or, you know, massage Thursday afternoon or fruit in the fruit bowl or Wednesday morning, those sort of things.
Yeah. We're only human, and you can't help but respond when somebody says good things about you or regards you well.
That's right.
So reliability and accountability, you mentioned that before. Take us through that part of the carrot principle, Mark.
Again, it's that idea of balance. You can't be compassionate and affirming without also wanting to be a reliable individual. And reliability within the workplace means that you turn up on time, you are there to do the hard yards when required. It's compassion and affirmation are the nice parts in a workplace, but reliability and accountability are saying, look, I'm here to do the job and I'm going to do it well. That's the accountability part.
And finally, there's trust. Who's that applying to? Probably both sides, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I've seen is that by treating people with compassion and affirmation, being reliable, calling people to account, that actually creates trust. That creates an environment, a culture, where trust is very high, where employees trust that their employer is going to take care of them, that through the lean times, their employer will be there. Through the good times, their employer is going to share some of that good stuff around.
I mean, I just think, again, it's just a no-brainer. You cannot have any kind of relationship, work or not, without a sense of trust.
Absolutely. And Herb Kelleher, great example of that, founder of United Airlines, similar, very, very much the approach was, he was at the forefront of the organisation, would roll up his sleeves, hand out, peanuts with the air stewards. It was that approach of we're in this for the long haul, we're in this together.
Yeah, and I'm on your side. On Open House, we're with Marg Toneman, who's the author of The Carrot Principle. Marg, what I'm struck by is how you've mentioned it before, how you've based so much of this principle on the words, the actions, the life of Jesus. So can I put this to you, isn't it a bit of a stretch in a way, applying that 2,000 years ago with management principles in 2011?
Leah, I certainly don't believe so, and I wouldn't have written the book if I felt so. And I say it in that way simply because what I love about the conduct of Jesus is that it is pertinent today, just as pertinent today as it was 2,000 years ago. And one of the reasons the book was written at the time, I was studying leaders and looking at what great leaders do. And again, I kept on coming back to the conduct of Jesus and how he manifested that idea of a great leader. And whilst we can talk about, well, what leaders do, and we know that academically they are vision and they communicate, what is difficult to find out is, well, how do they behave? Because essentially, it is how someone behaves. It is the contact. It's the content of their character. To quote Martin Luther King, it's that is the marker of who we are. So, I look at Jesus and I look at his examples, the biblical examples of his conduct, and I couldn't find. Obviously you can't find fault with the conduct of Jesus. But then I looked at how it can be applied in organisational life, and I thought, this is amazing.
Yes.
It is just as fresh, just as pertinent. And more so now, I think, more so where we're struggling with identity, and we struggle with this idea of, how much exists in some organisations, how much people get paid and how little others get paid, and all those sense, that sense of injustice that is heightened, I think.
Why do you think it is, Marg, that those kinds of character traits and lessons of life that Jesus urges upon us, that they can translate and indeed transform today?
When I certainly studied and researched for the book, one of the other things that struck me was that Jesus, and this is something that I think we can all accept irrespective of whether we agree that of his divine connection, I think one of the things that struck me is that he changed the world, and his impact is undoubted, something we can't dispute. What we can, argue and theorize is whether he was the Son of God, but that is beside the point, I suppose, with regards to his conduct.
Yes.
But his conduct changed the world and continues to change the world. And I looked at the conduct of Martin Luther King, another great world changer. And he was someone who changed America in the 60s. And then I looked at the conduct of Gandhi, who wasn't a Christian, but still used those same principles to change India and to change and call England to account in the same way that Martin Luther King called America to account. And so here were these Christians and non-Christians, to, you know, these two men who one was modelling his life on Jesus, the other certainly wasn't, but still used those same behaviours to change their generation and change the world.
And it's probably worth making the point that these are characteristics that can apply to people with faith or without.
That's exactly right. Yes. That's exactly right, which is why I think it was important that Gandhi was used there, because the premise essentially is saying that you can change the world, you can change your organisation by these principles. And here are three individuals, one Jesus, two Martin Luther King, three Gandhi, who may have had some different religious experiences in regards to Gandhi and Luther King, but they use that behaviour to change their generations and subsequent generations.
Mark, you also explore how the concept of rest applies to this, even resting in your leader or manager, how it might play out in the workforce, which I'm sure many would be scratching their heads about in this day and age, especially you see CEOs working their 12 to 14-hour days. What do you mean by that rest, Mark?
I use the quote, rest for the weary, and that is a biblical quote, which is saying that the way that we need to treat our staff is that once they're, you know, we send them out there, like, you know, out in the battlefield in sales, and they come back and they're battered and they're bruised, and you know, organisational life is tough. Work is tough, and there's a lot of pressure. And so what we need to be able to have that relationship where we come back to our leaders and our CEOs, and our CEOs can say, well, you know, rest in me. I'll cover you. I'll take care of you. I'll look after you, and I won't stab you in the back. I'm not going to hang you out to dry. I'm not just going to be looking at how I can increase my own salary, and I don't give two hoots about how you're going to make ends meet. Because that's the latter is what I see in organisations. And I see that in organisations that say things like, oh, we really do have a lot of respect. We do respect our people. I find that that's an oxymoron when a CEO takes a $5 million salary and then is retrenching staff on the other side of that ledger.
Yes. So you say behaviour creates a culture. So it's much more personal about who we are, our character that shapes a workplace and its culture.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, character it's our behaviour that creates culture, and it's the collective, when we refer to that word organisational culture, it's the sum of the individual's behaviour. And therefore, if we can address that, and this is what I do in the what I talk about, is that it's easy to say, we treat people the way we want to be treated. That's a much easier thing to say than to actually do, which is why those five behaviours are the markers. The five behaviours are, I suppose, the manifestation of that idea of treating others the way you want to be treated.
Yep.
And so there's that creates the balance in the workforce. And the behaviour, when managed well, that creates performance that organisations are about. It comes back to that lean and mean. We can still be lean, we just don't need to be mean.
Yeah. Here's a response, though, that I'd imagine many management types coming up with. They'd say, sorry, Mark, this business is not about making people happy. It's not about providing rest. I'm in this to either make money and or for the shareholders.
Yeah. And again, my argument is that if people are treated well, and again, you know, people don't wake up in the morning and think, what I want is to just, you know, the majority of people are going into work, they want to do a fair day's work, fair day's pay. You know, I have yet to see large examples, huge examples of people just slacking off and wanting to take people for a ride. What they're looking for is some fairness. And so the idea of treating people well creates loyalty that money just can't buy.
Yep.
And this is what we see in the example of Herb Kelleher, that when his organisation was about to shut down, his staff said, we'll work with no money. We'll continue to work through the tough times. And I've seen that in personal examples where staff have said, employees have said to their employer, don't worry about that salary increase. I know that when things get better, you're going to take care of us. Because historically, that's what that employer has done.
And there's the trust again.
Absolutely. If your people trust you, they'll perform. If they feel that there is just, you know, if their environment is fair and just, they'll perform. So what you get at the end of all of that is high performance.
Yeah. You do recognise the danger in this of this compassionate, affirming, trustworthy boss who's looking after his staff or her staff. There's a danger of him or her being taken for a ride and before long the lunatics are in charge of the asylum.
And this is why, again, it sounds as though I harp on about it, but it is saying you need to have balance between all those five behaviours.
Yep.
That's why we didn't see Jesus just be compassionate. Jesus is not only compassionate, but he calls people to account. He says, I forgive your sins, but sin no more. That's calling people to account. It's saying, I understand where you've been, but let's address where you're going. So it's that sense of you call people to account. And again, you know, the book is very much an introduction to behaviour. I'm currently working with organisations who have said to me, well, how do we make this real for us? How do we take this book and make it real for us? And one of my clients has asked me to write a program for them that does just that, that looks at how behaviour is managed, because what I've worked with, what I've seen in organisations, and is organisations do performance reviews and they do performance appraisals. And that means that someone can be have the most horrible behaviour, treat people abysmally, but still perform very well and get a promotion and continue to be promoted through the organisation, creating ongoing chaos as this toxic individual is promoted through the ranks. What's important is that organisations balance that performance appraisal with a behaviour appraisal.
Yes.
And that's what the Karat principle is about, is saying, look, it's not just, if we get the right culture, we get the right behaviour, performance will come.
There's such wisdom in it, and I'm so glad we've had a chance to explore it with you, Marg. We'll post the details of the Karat principle up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Marg Toneman, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.